Hello, this is Lindsay at Passionate Homemaking, and I'm excited that you can join us today for week two on our discussion through True Woman 101, Divine Design by Nancy Lita Moss and Mary Cassian. Today we're discussing week two, which is Snips and Snails on the importance and role of manhood as God created it. So hope you can enjoy listening in on our discussion today.
I want to comment on that question about undermining ways that women undermine men in our own lives, and I know that for me is very convicting. I find myself sometimes I have way too many suggestions, and I'm just really praying that God would just work with me on that, because I've realized that a lot of times it's kind of a know-it-all thing I have going on. You know, think I know more, or this and that, and just, too many suggestions that just sort of overwhelm my husband and kind of undermine. Anybody else want to make any comments on?
I read a blog post by a friend who lives around here, and she was talking about how, she was quoting a book, I can't remember what it was, but she was talking about how oftentimes, especially like with kids and stuff, we want to have our husbands help or include them in like all the daily routines and rituals, but a lot of times we just think, oh, he didn't do that quite right, or, he didn't clean up the kitchen exactly how I wanted him to, or he didn't put things away here, or he didn't put the right clothes on the kids, or whatever it is, and so then it's easy to be like, just don't worry about it, I'll do it. And then after a while it becomes like, well, he never helps me out, but in some way, like, we don't allow them to help us out or do certain things. And it was really good for me to read that, just to think like, okay, I tend to be a bit controlling, or like, if something isn't done exactly how I would want it to be done, I have to be able to let that go and allow them to be a part of what's happening in the house no matter what, and letting them feel like they have a place, and just affirming them in that way, not being so controlling about how everything gets done.
Good point.
I kind of recognized a while back that I kind of lost out on the gratitude aspect of what my husband was doing and focused on what he hadn't been doing. Like, so even just like the clothes, like instead of being like, thank you for getting up with Isabel and getting her dressed, instead it was like, did you think that outfit matches? Not really, I'm not necessarily saying that, but kind of that attitude. And trying to focus more in now on like, okay, let's be grateful and thankful for all the things that he is doing to make my life easier, instead of picking out the things he didn't do quite as the same way that I would have. Or so, yeah.
Yeah, I notice that with the kids, when you're training the kids, it's like, you can take the time and train them to do it and walk them through a three-step process and build on that. Or you can say, oh, it's just so much easier for me to do it myself. And then you end up, like you were saying, just resentful or just kind of martyr syndrome, or, just because you're not giving them space to do it a little bit differently, or wait it out long enough to... But then, in order for them to master whatever it is you're trying to teach them. But it's well worth the effort of pulling back and giving people space and letting them do it differently than you would do it. What are some constructive ways that we can affirm them and encourage men to be men? This is important stuff. I mean, to me, this is like the gut level stuff. But, I love this whole stuff. But I'm just How can we encourage men to be men? I want to get on the website, too. She sounded like they had some good information and ideas.
I think it's important just to be vocal and let them, using words of affirmation, letting them hear what you're seeing, that you appreciate, and changes that God is doing. And a lot of times we see them, but we don't really acknowledge it or verbalize it. And that really builds up and encourages.
I like what you were saying, just about listening and being willing to hear their ideas and suggestions and not just assuming that you have a better way of doing it. Let them do it their way, and, you know.
I think the act of simply asking questions, like she was mentioning, is really, really beneficial. Even in we think, like, some of the mundane things, you know, but just, like, trying to include them and allow them to lead in various ways like that, like, whether it be, like, you know, sometimes it's hard because, you know, he's like, oh, just do whatever you want to do. But I think there is an opportunity to, like, at least include them and encourage them in their manliness by asking them what their thoughts are on this, or should I do this, or, you know, just kind of trying to get their input, asking questions, and including them in the process of, so they have the opportunity to lead and protect in that way.
Yeah, I like that question, what are your thoughts on this? I think that's a good way to draw a person out and just kind of get their thinking on it, and after listening thoroughly, you can kind of mix, you know, discuss things peaceably. I found after years of doing it wrong, you know, I would just kind of be really quick to say my opinion instead of just kind of drawing out the other person's thinking, and just, what are your thoughts on this matter, and just thoroughly thinking it through and then peaceably discussing it. Much better fruit from that approach.
And then making sure that once you ask their thoughts, you actually show them that you respect what they say. Because sometimes, Stephen and I had a discussion a while back about how once in a while I'll ask him something, but I'll already kind of have my mind made up before I ask him, and then it seems like I'm not respecting what he has to say, or taking it and using it. So make sure that you're actually going to, you know,
carefully consider it.
Very good.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I thought we could just go through some of the lessons that we did this week, and if you want to make any comments, feel free. I've been going through and just kind of highlighting whatever things that stand out, you know, just so that when we discuss it, you kind of know what spoke to you. But yeah, just as a recap for this week, God created man with a unique responsibility to lead, provide, and protect. This does not mean that man gets to be king of the castle or to assume a more favorable position than woman. But it does mean that leadership, provision, protection, and responsible initiatives are central and indispensable to what God created man to be. I thought that was a good summary of the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But let's walk through a little bit from day one, and maybe somebody could read on page 44, Genesis 2, 7 and 8.
Then the Lord God formed the man of the dust. Then the Lord God formed the man of the dust from the earth, and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living creature. And the Lord God planted a garden in Eden, in the east, and there he put the man in the east.
Okay, what are some of the implications of this passage? That's your question on page 45. Any implications about that? verse. Yeah, when I was single, I got the first couple years I was a Christian, I got the work as a potter in a pottery shop, and it was so awesome because picturing that clay and seeing how God designed. I mean, the picture was totally, you know, when you're making pottery like that, you have a specific picture in your mind exactly how you want it to be, and you're kind of working with your hands and just kind of forming it according to, you already see it, you're already kind of, and just kind of working it with your hands, and I mean, it's just amazing how God had it totally designed in his mind how he was going to create man and woman specifically for his glory, and the specifics all planned out.
I thought the idea of how God breathed life into him and that man's spirit comes directly from the breath of God, that's pretty cool. You know, just wrap your mind around that, like God breathed into him and like brought man from the dust, formed, like you said, like the pottery, and then he breathed life into him. It's like, so every facet from the forming to the life itself was intentionally created by God.
I love the thought that we're created in his likeness and loved by him. When he stamped his image on us, he crowned us with unsurpassed dignity and worth. Because of this, men and women ought to just treat each other with a deep respect, because we're made in his image and his likeness.
Something from our marriage class, it was talking about, you know, how like sometimes other people's characteristics, you know, their nose or the way they talk with their hands or something can, you know, just get on your nerves. And he was saying that when that is grating on your nerves, then really what's happening is God, what he did is, you know, is you're saying that what God did is not good enough, you know. So I thought that was very convicting. Maybe not necessarily about my husband, but, you know, other people. Isn't that what he said? Something?
Just being more accepting of people and just respecting them.
Yeah. I mean, it could definitely apply to our spouses, because our spouses always
say, yeah.
Something that annoys us.
Yeah. Like, I know I do things that annoy my husband.
You guys enjoy? Is everybody finding time to do the? Does it feel a little overwhelming to anybody, or how's it going with the? Able to squeeze in bits of time.
As long as I don't wake up too early.
As long as you don't wake up too early.
Because they don't wake up.
Oh, they wake up. Yeah, yeah. Are you guys enjoying it? Are you getting good stuff out of it?
Yeah, you know, when we went through this, she repeats. They repeat 3 or 4 times, and we were talking about this, about how this doesn't make men any better than women,
mm-hmm.
and we're like, why does she keep saying that? And Hannah said, well, you know, we're in a conservative church, and so we respect the men. And we understand that, you know, I mean, we're complementarian, and so we understand that we're equal before God. We just have different roles. And Hannah said, you know, in other churches, they don't have that. And as we were talking about before, they don't really have that understanding. And so the women and the men might not have as understanding that we have of the roles. And so they keep saying that in here, that doesn't make men any better than women, because there's churches that teach that men are better than women.
Or you got people just recently coming back from the pushback from the whole feminist movement,
right,
and everything. So there's just that whole thing going on. So it probably is more of an emphasis because of our culture and everything. Yeah. Well, even Mary Cassian, she says that she came from a very feminist background. You know, just a lot of resistance. It's been real hard for her, but super blessed at the same time, just coming to just the biblical knowledge of the right balance and that appropriate appreciation for both sexes and how God's designed it.
Mm-hmm. And we're very like me-centered, so it's hard to read a chapter on malehood and just be like, wait a second, you know, everything, like, how does this apply to me, you know, like, because we're already trying to interpret everything. But we have to just realize that this is just one of the chapters, and we've got to balance it with the whole context of, you know. And so I think that's probably why, because a lot of people would come to it just for this whole thing, like, why are we just talking all about, you know, men's role and how God glorified, you know, them into this is their role, without having to try to keep it. We have to just keep it, you know, the proper balance. And so she's just trying to balance that so carefully, just like, wait, guys, let's focus on malehood, and then we're going to delve the rest of the book into your role as a woman, you know. So, but showing they both have, dignity and value, just different responsibilities.
Right, and probably starting next week, she'll say, no, this doesn't make women any better than men.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear about the whole woman's side next week, so that should be good, too, for sure.
I thought it was interesting to note that, I don't know if anybody ever thought of that, but how God created Adam outside of the garden.
Yeah.
I had never really even thought about that until I read reading through it more, and I was like, oh yeah, then he created the garden, and he put man in the garden. And woman wasn't even created until a man had already been established in his home, and had given his work assignment of naming the animals, and then God just kind of brings woman along to help in that. And I thought, that's really cool, you know?
Yeah.
God, just like he called man to leave and forsake and reap the family and cling to their wife, it's like, yeah, the home being established for man and his work assigned to him. I don't know, I thought that was...
Yeah, I always just assumed that he was created in the garden, you know, as opposed to out of the garden and then put in the garden.
Yeah, exactly.
I just never even thought about that as a point. What do you think the point of that is? I mean, just so that he was a separate, whole separate creation just in and of himself, and then the garden and the...
I think what she was saying is it's tying back to his primary responsibility, that of providing. He's created out of the ground from which he has to work, and then he's placed into the protected environment,
his domain,
exactly, of the garden for him to kind of, you know, supervise and rule over. And so I think it just emphasized, I think she, by bringing that up, she's emphasizing more that God had a specific plan for man, and that was primarily to work, to provide, and to protect and provide for his family and such.
I think it almost communicates to Adam, too, that he wasn't an afterthought. You know, God made him, and then he made his home. It wasn't like, oh, here's the garden and all these animals, now I need someone to watch over them. You know, like, this is your purpose, this is your place, this is your responsibility.
And since Eden means delight, it was like God created man, and then he goes, here, I want you, I am giving you delight, and you need to, you know, store it and watch over it and protect it, and this is your place. Delight.
Work was intended to be this joyful pursuit,
right,
you know, from the very beginning. Like I said, delight, that's really good to think of it in that way, that his domain is delight, luxury, paradise.
Yeah.
You know, and like, that is what God intended for it to be, a beautiful thing, that we would cultivate the ground and work and labor.
Tusk Costa Lee wrote a fiction book about Eve, and you know, of course it's extra biblical, you know, and she never intended it to be biblical, but she takes the whole story of Adam and Eve, and it really helped me understand, you know, the Bible has a tendency to be a little bit bare bones in some ways, and the way that she did it, and I'm not saying it's biblical the way that she did it, but the way that she did it helped me understand how the work, you know, and the delight that Adam and Eve had. I mean, you know, even, you know, placing seeds in the ground, for instance, and then the delight that they would have in seeing how God made those seeds grow, and the whole learning experience of cultivating and the joy in working in the garden and the relationships that they had with the animals before sin entered the world and animals became afraid and stuff like that. So, you know, as I said, it's not biblical, but it did help me a little bit to understand better the delight in work that Adam had before the fall.
Well, what did you think about what he was saying about how he got to name all the animals and everything as a preparation for leadership before Eve came? I never thought about that either. Mm-hmm. You know, just that whole idea of him through the exercise of naming all the animals. Mm-hmm. What'd you guys think of that?
Well, frankly, I thought that they read in to the scripture there,
mm-hmm.
because I can get the whole thing about authority, about because he named the animals, but as far as learning how to, what is she saying here?
Spiritual leadership? Or,
No, she taught she said that it taught him how to serve and how to take care of Eve and so forth. And really, all it says in there is that God brought him the animals and he named them. So, you know, I get the authority part, but as far as learning how to treat Eve through simply naming the animals, I thought that was reading into the scripture.
Yeah, she could have taken it a little far, but I think in general, I think it was interesting to emphasize that the Lord may have designed it in that way. And yeah, we don't know for sure because it's not necessarily, you know, specified. But he may have, you know, as she said, may have used that to give him a little practice on exercising authority. And I think that's primarily what she was, you know, communicating. Because yeah, it would be hard to learn. Yeah, because you're not really serving the animals. Because they don't have that kind of ability to communicate and show, you know, whatever. So in that sense, it may be, yeah, definitely may have been taking it a little far. But that does come with exercising authority, is that having to learn how to serve and give.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, what she said was, he wanted the man to learn to attend to someone other than himself, to learn how to serve, and to learn to exercise authority with gentleness, kindness, wisdom, and much care. And I just, you know, I mean, God brought the animals to Adam to name them. It doesn't say anything about teaching him how to care for them and translating that to caring for Eve and so forth. So.
But he did have to put some thought into it. It's not like, yeah, he was just standing there and be like, right, blah, 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 blah. You know, he did have to kind of like, you take his authority and like really kind of, and I think that's showing like the caring aspect, like, yeah, what is this animal like, you know, and I had to kind of observe the animal and like giving it a name through that kind of caring process, I think.
What does this animal do?
Exactly. And so how can I give it a name that kind of relates? Because names had so much meaning, especially mm-hmm. in the Bible. It always had meaning.
Right.
You know,
right.
Eve meaning, you know, life, giver of life, whatever.
Adam,
so it's like, you know, so I think Adam would probably have had that natural, like, putting the thought and care and attention into that name giving process. And in that sense, it could have been very well a good training ground for preparing him to name his wife and train her, you know, to obey the commands of the Lord and stuff.
Yeah.
At the same time, it almost seems like the purpose of that passage is to, like, the end of it is, but there was no helper found for him. Mm-hmm. So it seems like it's more, less of the fact that he's naming these animals as to explore the fact that there's no mate for him, you know? So I kind of agree with what you're saying. And was that a distinctly a man thing, or was it just the fact that he was a human and they're all animals? He has the ability to, you know, he's made in the image of God, they're not, that's why he has that dominion. Because, I mean, I think we'd all say that women also, had Eve been there, would have been naming them right along with him. So it's like...
specifically...
True.
Yeah. From there, I think there was a God that had the plan and intention and all of that.
Yeah. It said, like, previous to that, that God made Adam, and that it was that God saw that it was not good for man to be alone.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like he wanted Adam to come to that place too before he made Eve.
Yeah, that's exactly what we thought. But when asked the question, "What do you think? Why do you think God did this?" and that's what we talked about.
Yeah. And that's exactly what that, I wrote too. Yeah.
Yeah. And then it came up that
was but then the next day, I think
the next page. The next page.
She does emphasize that more so.
Yeah.
She did feel that it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then she shares about how it could have been like God desiring.
What did she use the phrase? Linking it back to Christ. I think that was really cool throughout the study, how she keeps linking the roles back to how we image Christ. And she said that perhaps he wanted the man to feel the longing intensely to love and want a soulmate with the same sort of passion that Christ felt for his future bride. Mm-hmm. Just kind of getting your mind around that. Yeah, that could have been. God is just trying to show Adam that need for a mate, you know, as Christ passionately desired a bride. And that's why he came and gave himself. Like, that's just, it's cool.
Well, isn't it? Because, I mean, there was two of every animal, right? So you figure he was noticing that there was a male and female. How does this work? And they're going to multiply, and I'm not. I mean, it does say
the man was obvious, like, hello, Adam, wake up. Just trying to make it really obvious here. We need a wife.
Sure.
Yeah, I forgot about that 2x2 thing. I thought, he must have been noticing that. It was male and female.
One, two.
Well, it probably made him more thankful when she did come.
Yeah.
Man, he was ready. Come on.
The thought even struck me that I kind of felt that it was beautiful that, like, Adam knew that he needed Eve and that life was not right and complete and good before she came. Mm-hmm. And I kind of wonder if maybe that was a little bit of a comfort, like, later on after Eve ate the fruit first and then, you know, Adam and they got cast out of the garden. Like, you still have this confidence that, like, this is the woman that God made for me, and it's good, and life is better because she's here. Even if we're not in the garden anymore, yeah, that stinks, you know, but, you know, this is my life, my partner, you know. This is who God made to complete me, and this is good, you know. Kind of a grand thought, but...
Even though now she irritates me with the fact that she leaves the tuba, the lid off the tuba.
Let's look at Ephesians 5:28-29, page 52. Unless there's something else that I don't want to jump too fast, but if, like I said, if you want to mention something, go ahead. Well, I did like on page 49, the male at the top of the page on 49, the male was created with a unique responsibility to work, to provide for the family, and the female was created with a unique responsibility to nest and nurture family relationships. I thought that was.
was really encouraging because I know, you know, my husband, you know, just men, just the struggle of supporting the family and just the, you know, the carrying the weight of the whole financial thing, you know. I mean, sometimes, you know, my husband, you know, gets stressed over that. I don't usually stress over that. I stress over relationships, you know, if things aren't just really right, that kind of, and just sort of reaffirmed it to me, yeah, that we're, as females, are just are more of the nesting, nurturing, relational, you know, and they're more designed to carry that, you know, that weight of the, you know, the main support and you know, financial support and everything. I don't know. You guys find yourselves that more into the nesting and relationships as opposed to.
That's funny because I see it in Lucy. Already. Mm-hmm. Mommy, be quiet. My baby's going to sleep. I'm pushing her around in the stroller and dressing her up and wrapping her and feeding her. And, like, it's already hardwired into her at such a young age.
So cute. Mm-hmm.
Men don't have a problem going to work. In general, men don't have a problem going to work because they know that work is what they're supposed to be about. Whereas women, I think even feminist women who think that they can have it all, family and work and so forth, really struggle going to work sometimes. I mean, you look at people like that lady that was the CEO of PepsiCo, mm-hmm. and she left it all to come home and be with her children. And so forth. And I know when I've worked outside the home, it's excruciating. And I don't think that men have that same problem leaving the home, leaving their children that women do, because it's hardwired into us that we're the nurturers and we're relational. And men want to work. They want to conquer, and they want to build, and they want to accomplish things. And they love their children, but they're not. The way that they take care of their children is different than the way that women take care of their children.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think they asked a question in there, like, how did you feel about God creating man first? I think implying that, like, being created first required the responsibility to authority and to provide and protect. And I was like, I feel relief. Like, I was so thankful. I was like, okay, it doesn't mean I'm lazy or anything, but it's more like I feel very much wired towards totally different things. And I'm so thankful that there's somebody else who's created to complement that perfectly and want to do those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I heard that too. Just peace. I have no problem with that.
Exactly.
I feel peace. I feel secure. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel thankful. Mm-hmm. I have no, you know, competitive thing that I want to do with that. I mean, if God calls you to that, and you have to, amen. You do what you got to do. But, you know, if you're able to. That's real blessing just to have them carry that weight. I find it just stressful leaving my house with kids. Mm-hmm. You know, just leaving them, I find that just a whole nother level of stress, just, you know, that you have to deal with, you know.
And I think that's another way that the climate in the Christian church, or the culture in which the Christian church is the way that God designed things. During Randy's recent period of unemployment, he has a group that he meets with, on Wednesday nights, and during this period of unemployment, there were men in the group that asked him, well, why doesn't your wife work? And And he said, well, she's sick. She's not physically capable of working outside the home right now. And I said, I appreciate your defending me, but the truth is, that's not my responsibility. And men, even in Christian circles, think that women have a responsibility to help provide, and they don't.
How about on page 51, if somebody wants to read Genesis 2:15? That's kind of what we're talking about.
I'll read it. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work and to work it and to keep it.
That's it.
Short and sweet.
God designed the man's responsibility to work and keep. What does this mean? How'd you like the definition of keep? That was kind of enlightening.
There are like three or four verbs in the source for it. There's so many different aspects of it.
Yeah.
I didn't look it up. Can somebody read some of it?
It says keep meaning to be in charge of, means to in a thesaurus, guard, protect, look after. It involves attending to and protecting the person's property under one's charge. Keeping extends beyond the physical to include a spiritual component of protection. I thought that was really interesting too, just seeing not just the physical, but the spiritual responsibility of the man as the head of the household. Mm-hmm. Just to, there's a lot of things that, you know, spiritual protection is, I feel more stronger about that sometimes than, you know, helmets and all this, you know, safety stuff that people, you know, some people are really extreme on, you know, the safety aspect. I mean, I'm all for being safe and everything, of course, but it seems like you can get really extreme on that. But a lot of people, you know, well, non-Christians not really aware of the whole spiritual safety that, you know, is so important. Mm-hmm.
I think one of the interesting things about that particular verse is that it's before Eve is around. It's specifically regarding the garden and his home. Like, that there's a spiritual aspect of protecting and serving his home, like his creation.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, that's where the temptation occurred, you know, and we make them just, I thought it was interesting the way she put it, that God told it to him, and he was responsible to tell her. I always thought that God spoke directly to her about, you know,
about the command not to eat, and to eat, etc., was given before she was actually created. So it was basically a command entrusted to Adam, and Adam was in turn supposed to, can you pass that on to his wife? But obviously he failed to protect her in that sense. But it is kind of interesting that command, you know, here's a garden where you are to keep and maintain, but and, you know, eat of all this and enjoy it all, but not the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Seems like a pretty basic command, ultimately, but failed to communicate that. I was curious to hear if you guys had any insight as to what ways is this responsibility of man to selflessly provide as well as defend and protect a mirror
mirror Jesus, what Jesus does for the church. I like that, but I thought that was such a, like, we just need to keep bringing it back to the gospel and what Jesus has done for us. It's just such a good reminder. Because I think it helps when we see how Christ lived it out, it gives us so much more vision and grace to live it out ourselves. And like, this is, you know, Christ's responsibility, and this was the church's responsibility as his bride. So, I just wrote down, like,
what page is that?
It's at the bottom of 51. Okay. And on 50, it talks about the selflessly providing for others, and how does that mirror Jesus's address to the church. And I just was thinking about how Jesus is our advocate before the Father, and how he makes intercession for us. And that is how, you know, he is defending and protecting his bride, in a sense. And I think, and also, you know, that he is guarding us against the enemy, because he has protected us, he has brought us back, and he's defending us. That just kept coming back to my mind, is how God intercedes for us, and how that can be an image of how the man is responsible, you know, for protecting and nourishing and watching over in that spiritual sense, as Christ does for the church. Did anybody else have any insights on that?
Yeah, I was thinking about him being our shield. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, he's our defense and our shield.
I think in a sense it helps us give our husbands grace.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're humans and fallible, just like we are, but Christ is not fallible, and he will always protect us and defend us and keep us.
That's true. Yeah, good reminder that he ultimately is our husband.
That's right. Yeah.
Turn to Ephesians 5:28-29. Kelly, you want to read that?
Sure. In the same ways, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself, for no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church.
So, what are the two verbs that indicate what Christ does for the church?
Nourish and cherish.
Great words, don't you think? Mm-hmm. Love those words. Feel about the fact that God requires men to step up to the plate as providers and protectors? Oh yeah, we talked about that. Anybody have a problem with that? You take issue with that, do you?
Not anymore, but I used to.
Really?
Yeah. Back when I was in the Army, I was, you know, never going to depend on a man to take care of me. And, you know, I had all these feminist ideas. Yeah, God changed my heart, thank goodness. Funny in life, where I am now.
Mm-hmm. How'd you get there? Was it a gradual process?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, when we first got married and had Noah and Shelby, I was working, actually making more money than Darren. And I don't know, something just God started working, and I ended up quitting work. And it's just kind of been, you know, it was a struggle at first still, you know, with my ideas and stuff. But,
yeah.
God working. sometimes slowly. That's usually how it works for me. He's real slow.
And I think that's the same with all of
them. Yeah, I'm into that.
It's no instant miracles.
So what did she say as far as the definition of nourish and cherish?
Because
I thought that was really interesting to discuss. What does that look like, nourishing and cherishing?
Anybody want to comment on nourishing?
Just the word alone was really interesting to me, because when you break it down, when you think of the word nourish, I would usually put that under the wife's side of the gifting or responsibility, or but that it was also part of the husband's role was really interesting to me to think about with that verb specifically.
We do tend to think it's more of a woman thing, nourishing, you know, mothering, and that whole thing. But well, kind of ties in that verse about the husband's watering with a word, you know, the wife, and
yeah, the word that came to mind for me was cultivate. You know, like how a good husband cultivates his wife and puts her in an environment in which she can thrive and really serves her in that way.
It's good.
There's certain things, I've thought about this even with our children, you know, just certain things that you can do in your home to cultivate and nourish, set that kind of atmosphere of nourishing and cultivating just by the, you know, the books that we have provide for our kids and certain, you know, toys or activities or just resources that, you know, are cultivating and nourishing as opposed to and just being careful. Sometimes people give you stuff and you end up having to pitch it. Or just, somehow that just went to the Goodwill. Or it just disappeared. I don't know where it went. But it needed to go. Warren wasn't quite feeling good about that. It was not the nourishing or cultivating things that, you know.
Like when Steven received a Nintendo for Christmas from the grandparents. Mom's like, threw it down the hallway.
I was just like, all these neighbor kids were coming over. I mean, I didn't mind the neighbor kids, but they were just coming for the Nintendo, you know. And it was just like day after day. And, you know, and just the temptation that just sucking up hours.
You know, it was, down the hallway.
It was great.
It went. Get out
of here. It was gone.
He still laments that, so you could
see. Some sacrifices tragic, you have to pay.
I think it was worth it.
More interested in the kid learning how to read than pushing buttons.
I think that's primarily what a lot of boys, especially, spend a lot of their time with nowadays.
Yeah, that, I was just thinking about that myself. It's extremely sobering. There have been a few blog posts that I've read recently about how video games are, how there's a generation, even two generations of young men that are growing up playing video games instead of learning how to live life. And, you know, there's nothing wrong with playing games. I don't have any problem with games being played, but there's a time and a place for them. And video games, you know, like Thomas had a Nintendo when he was a kid, and he became addicted to it. He would shake when he was playing it, and we got rid of it. Because, and he know, you know, video games are addictive, and it's really, really sad what is going on with the young generation of men that are growing up and they're just playing games. They're not learning responsibility.
Yeah, it seems to be postponing maturity.
Yeah.
getting caught up on these other things when they should be really putting more effort towards maturity and working and just learning how to do life.
There's actually studies by non-Christian groups that have been done on video games, and that when we play video games, it releases the same chemicals in our brain as doing heroin does. So that's why it's so addictive.
Really? Huh.
I only let my boys get 30 minutes of heroin a day. My daughter cares nothing about them. She's like, that's so silly, I don't know why they And the boys are like, Mama, can I have my 30 minutes?
What do you think it, what's it mean to be the man of the house? What does it not mean? Who wants to bite that one off? Somebody that hasn't said anything. I bet you have all kinds of insight. Your dad is a great dad. Tell us about it.
I think it definitely needs to be protective. And, nourishing. Even to other women outside of the home, you know. Our neighbor across the street, she's living in her parents' house. They're not living there anymore. But she's by herself there. And she had a man working on the roof, cleaning her roof for her, and he fell off. And was badly injured. And so my dad was, you know, helping her, keeping her safe, making sure she was emotionally okay. So I think it definitely needs to be protective of any woman that needs protecting.
What does it not mean?
Oh, I got an email this last week. This is totally what it not does not mean, because it was shocking. Basically, her husband has such a controlling attitude over everything in his house. He has to have the say on everything. He buys all the food. He, you know, totally manages and controls the budget and gets angry at her if she does not tell him how she's spending the money. And if the house is slightly a mess, he's like freaking out. And to me, it ultimately came down to like he's so possessive over her and her time, her energy, and her domain that I don't know. It's pretty scary. Like
grace is a big thing too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point.
The fifth day's one, maybe fourth or fifth, I'm not sure if we're there yet. But it was asking about like what, when it's talking about Christ being a servant. I think the world view a lot of times is the guy comes home from work, I deserve my chair, my lazy boy, and somebody bring me my beer. Like, that's his attitude. It's not one of sacrificing and serving his wife and his family, which is what Christ and the husband are responsible for Christ. So it's not one of deserving something, but one of continuing to lay yourself to.
Good.
I think it can also mean abdicating any responsibility in the house. Just kind of living your life in the house. Not fulfilling any responsibility that you have as a man to nurture your children, or lead your children, lead your wife, do things around the house.
Yeah. Yeah. How about, what exactly does it mean for a male to man up? Did you get to that part, Phil? towards the end?
Kind of. Well, I think it, I mean, it means similar to what it means for a man to be a man of the house. Just taking responsibility and, yeah, tending to his household and making sure. Not in a controlling way, obviously, but, you know, in an appropriate way. Taking spiritual leadership and, yeah, providing.
I like what you just said about grace. You know, my dad was, bless his heart, you know, he was just, you know, this big Italian guy, and just a sweet guy. But he, yeah, not a lot of grace. I mean, he liked things a certain way, and he would get upset, you know. And I don't know, I kind of grew up just a little bit of fear, and, you know, occasionally oppressive, where grace, I think, is just, I mean, it's great to have order and like things a certain way, and but grace, especially when you have children, and, yeah, the wife, you know, you try your best to make things happen and everything, but you definitely need an atmosphere of grace going with it, you know, so, for the man, I think that, well, even us as wives and mothers and daughters, just be supportive and have an attitude of grace in our homes. It really goes a long ways to peace and harmony and just cultivating growth and positive attitudes in our kids. I like that.
Because there's nothing I can do to make him be a man, and there's nothing he can do to make me be a wife I'm supposed to be. Mm-hmm. We both just need to give each other grace and allow God to work.
Yeah. How about Mark? Mark 10. Let's close with that and. Page 60, Mark 10. Anybody want to read that? Go ahead.
Those who are considered rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their great ones exercise authority over them. But it shall not be so among you. But whoever would be great among you must be your servant, and whoever would be first among you must be slave of all. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for all.
Okay, can you summarize Christ's perspective on how a person in authority should or should not view his or her position? Does anybody want to summarize that, or just the right authority, I mean, attitude towards that authority?
These people generally think that authority means control, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought of it that way until I read this chapter. Now I like to think of it as power to serve and to give.
Yeah, I think it's also a good reminder that I think a lot of people think of a position of authority as something that they earned or that they somehow got to because of their own work or whatever, and it's actually a place that was prepared for them, and so it's not because of their own work that they got there.
Not so much a right as a responsibility.
That's a good point. I mean, it's easy to lose sight of that, that God puts every, you know, every position is in God's oversight, and he, I mean, even, wasn't that Pilate said Jesus said to Pilate, the authority has been given to you, you don't have any authority except it's been given by God. That's really good. I mean, I think it would help you, a person in a position, just fear God more. You know, this God has put you here, and you need to walk humbly and holy before Him, and not be, you know, lording it over, but walking in humility and servanthood. So opposite of the world. So opposite. What a great witness, though, you know, for people to walk in that kind of humility and servanthood. It's a powerful witness. That's saying that. How about this? How does Christ view on authority counter the idea of wives being squelched, dominated, or abused by their husbands, or men using positions of authority for personal gain?
You can't really be squelched if someone is giving themselves for you. I mean, that's liberating. It's not like, you know, it's a great thing. And, I don't know, if Christ's view is that leadership is servantness, servant-heartedness, and something you do for personal gain, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that that society just has like a misconstrued view of what submission and headship really is, and they think that it's this like domineering, like, you know, the wife can't talk, the man is in control of everything, and it's not, and that's not really what it is. I mean, it's a husband is to serve and provide and to give himself to his wife, which is quite the contrary to what society thinks that.
Well, I'm just excited to hear, get into this next chapter and talk about this next week. So, does anybody have any final comments that they wanted to, anything else want to say? Anything?
I think I was just struck by the responsibility that I have in raising my firstborn son. Like,
yeah.
Is there any difference in the fact that he's the firstborn son, even though he isn't the firstborn child? And how does that play into anything? But just also the responsibility for him and any other boys that we have, and raising them and training them to be prepared to step into the role that God has for them, as He created them for.
Yeah.
Not just thinking about my husband, but thinking about the future.
Yeah. It's interesting what she was saying about the firstborn. It's a lot of responsibility. Or even the oldest son. A lot of responsibility.
That's becoming more apparent as mine becomes a young man. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be 14 and yeah, there's definitely, I see where I need to respect him and, you know, let him become a man, and that's hard.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, as a mom and wanting to keep him from making those mistakes.
Well, that's
fine. But it's hard for my husband, too.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm thankful to have a husband and a wife. I could see the benefit of having two because,
yeah.
You know, yeah, I could, Greg Harris used to say, you know, women want to train their sons to be little girls, you know, having the male aspect definitely helps. I mean, my husband's just the opposite. I'm trying to, you know, this whole thing, and he's, let him go, do this, let him do it. And so it's a good balance because, yeah, they need a certain amount of space, you know, young men to develop and to grow into those responsibilities. And I don't know if it comes natural for us women to cultivate that. It's, you know, it's helpful to have male input to do it with, for sure. So why don't we go ahead and divide up and pray. And yeah, so yeah, just pray for time to, you know, for us busy moms to give it the time and, you know, learn everything God wants us to learn. So did you all have a good place to go for your prayer last time? It worked out and everything? Oh, do we have a couple? Any people today that don't have a group?
Yeah. Oh, you're leaving. Mandy's with Marlis and Sarah Jane and Kelly. And then Rachel, if you want to join Christine, I'll pray for like 5 minutes and run out of here. But, yeah.
Is there anything that you need to do? Just lock
the door.